welcome to iDeveloper Live, episode 13. There we are, that's the answer, 13. We get here at last after several reboots and lots of false starts. And on a day where I had to finish dead on time, we start 14 minutes late. But here we are, live on iDeveloper Live, and hopefully still with me after all this time is my co-host, Mr. John Fox.
Hello, Mr. Scotty, how are you?
I'm feeling better now, John, that we are broadcasting to our beloved public, all 22 of them.
I offer to call whoever it is that you're supposed to be meeting after this thing and to kind of be incredibly rude to them so that they would cancel the meeting and you wouldn't have to worry about meeting with them ever again. But you didn't want to take me up on that helpful offer.
I didn't. John, you've invited one of our guests on today. Why don't you just quickly introduce him?
Okay, we have Brendan Clavin, who purports to be Irish. I really think he's French-Canadian, but he's from a company called Tetris, who does localization as a service. So I've been waiting for this day patiently for the last couple of weeks.
It's great to have you on the show, Brendan. You could see by what you've witnessed so far how professional this setup is, and I hope your contribution will be just as good.
I think I might fit right in with this crowd all right, but a pint of Guinness in my hand might help, but it's a bit early in the day for that.
Not in Ireland, it's not.
No, in Ireland, you'd have started several hours ago. But there we are. It's and of course, he's back for his second Cocoa Fusion, Mr. Michael Fay.
Hey, Scotty, how are we doing today?
I'm doing good, and there's something we have to say to you. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to you. There we are. That's enough of that rubbish. Let's move on.
Thanks, Chance. I appreciate that.
The big 3-0, I understand. So now you join us old men.
Yeah, that's correct. I am collectively raising the bar for all 30-year-olds as of today. It's good stuff.
So, okay, let's deal with the news. John, you've got something to tell us about Cappuccino.
Yes, Cappuccino hit, speaking of birthdays, Cappuccino hit 0.9 last week. I think it was either Thursday or Friday, but I was playing around with it over the last couple of days, and it is quite the milestone. In addition to adding a bunch of classes like NS Outline View, the big thing that I'm so happy with is now they have bindings and array controllers, and you can use them in Interface Builder. So there's this command line tool called nib2sib, which takes your IB files and converts them into Cappuccino Interface Builder files, and it is just glorious. You can now get back to creating applications without a dozen lines of code for every, button and other widget that you throw on the screen.
So there was lots of talk for a while that Cappuccino was dead because there'd not been an update for ages. So I guess people have just answered that cry with this, because this is, is it 0.9, did you just say it was?
Yes, 0.9. And as they said in the release notes, the reality is that many people would have put a 1.0 label on that, but they have a couple other things that they want to get done. It's very funny because it is true that when you're involved in a project and you're in the IRC rooms and you kind of know the people involved, you kind of are aware of what's going on. But as people have rightly pointed out, if you go to the cappuccino.org website, none of the activity, none of the GitHub commits, none of the chat, none of the mailing list kind of back and forth is represented there. So yeah, people would think, oh my gosh, something's happening with it. But no, it's really moving along. I'm incredibly pleased with this release. And I had nothing to do with it other than being a happy user.
You actually have production code out there in Cappuccino, don't you, John?
I do. And what's nice about it is that, there is the mantra for Cocoa developers, it's the best, most wonderful code in the world is the code you never have to write in the first place. And what's nice is to be able to see how you can just get rid of stuff. Stuff that, glue code that you used to have to do can now can disappear. And code for configuring, your views disappears. You just encode it all in your little nib file like we're used to doing on Cocoa. Run this little quick command line tool and you're good to go.
So are you going to be pushing out a new memory miner release, John, pretty soon that's got a lot less code in it then?
I will. And that's at NS Conference. What I'm going to be doing is just showing this web version of Memory Miner. So it's not exactly the same application, but it's quite similar. It just takes a different approach. It basically, instead of working with Address Book and iPhoto, it works with Flickr and Facebook.
Very cool.
Yeah, I think I'm looking forward to it. And it will be nice to be able to say, here's the hundreds of lines of code that just disappear. So.
Very cool.
Okay, so let's just have a quick chat before we move on to some stuff about this. whole thing of in-app subscriptions that are now available to everyone. Now, we sort of touched on a story briefly last week about readability's rejection, which we totally hashed up because we hadn't read the story properly at the time, so I thought we needed to come back to it. And this whole concept that now if you offer content in your app, you have to provide it through Apple as well, and that's including subscriptions, and how that's going to affect a whole bunch of people. And then this whole controversy over what is content and what is software as a service. And then, of course, if someone wants to pick up on the fact that there's this supposed email from Steve Jobs saying that, you know, this subscription service is aimed at content, not software as a service, but no one quite knows what makes a distinction yet. So anyone got any thoughts on that?
I fear to make my public thoughts known. No, my private thoughts known to public.
You fear to make your public thoughts any more public?
Okay. No, my private thoughts.
Thanks for the help, John. that's really useful.
So I've been a little bit out of the loop on this one. So what exactly does readability provide?
Okay.
Well, there's the one.
Go on, John, after you.
Well, isn't that it's the technology that was embedded in Safari that basically does a summary of web pages and then pulls out the ads. So you can just get to it. I didn't know this, but apparently they licensed technology to Apple and putting it in Safari. Was it Safari 5 or whatever the current version is?
In readability, they have a subscription service where you're paying, but what they actually do is they pay 70% of what they get to the authors of the articles. Now, their argument is that now if Apple takes 30% and whatever else, their whole business model disappears, and, you know, that's not fair. Now, whether that's fair or not fair is a different matter. But then there's a whole bunch of issues coming up about, you know, what about people like Dropbox who have professional accounts, but they don't currently offer it in the application and things like that. Are they going to start getting rejected? Or does that definitely count as software as a service? So where's content versus service? And it actually, I think the whole point we have here is this isn't very clear, is it? That's the thing, that there is a whole gray area here. And Apple, one thing we know is Apple will never just say, hey, we got this wrong. Because they don't. So it's going to be interesting to see how this sort of, this ruling, sort of gets interpreted over the next 3 to 6 months. And, you know, because I think the way Apple tend to deal with this stuff is they don't just say we got it wrong, but they just sort of change it a little bit here and a little bit there. They interpret it a little bit differently. And where you might eventually end up is maybe a little different to where you started. Well, I can tell by the input here that actually you don't really care, do you?
Are you talking to the audience there, Mr. Scott?
I'm talking to you lots.
No, I just that I personally am just waiting for the notification to go out that it's time for Cocoa Fusion.
You want Cocoa Fusion, John? You can have Cocoa Fusion. Well, it's time for Cocoa Fusion. This is where we get all technical. You wanted more tech? We gave you tech. We've brought him in, Mr. Michael Fay, who set the bar high on his first attempt. What are you going to talk about today, Michael?
Well, I'm going to lower the bar a little bit today, Scotty, and we're going to dial it back. Something it's kind of a short topic, actually. It's not too complicated. It's just something I wanted to cover, really for some of the more novice users, novice listeners of the show.
Excellent. So what is it we're covering?
NS Notification Center. So last time I was on, I spoke a little bit about the responder chain and how that's a communication avenue within an app. So I decided to sort of stick with that vein, and we're going to go with the NS Notification Center, which is also, it provides a means of indirect communication within your app. Go ahead.
Okay, that's great. Well, I'm going to be totally honest here and say I'm struggling to see the chat room, so I'm going to try and fix that. So I'm going to leave you in John's capable hands while you do that. So over to you.
All right, great. So I'm just going to dive right in, John, if that's all right.
You do that.
All right. Wonderful. And you stop me if at any point, you know, I need to be course corrected.
Okay.
So the Annis Notification Center is similar to a message board. You post messages to it, and you can listen for other messages to be posted. It's a singleton, so every app has just one, and it provides a means to register for and post notifications. One thing it does not do, like sort of straight out of the box, is inter-app communication. The NS Notification Center is really designed for intra-app communication. Sort of the main object that is handled by the Notification Center are these NS Notification objects that sort of take messages and wrap up any sort of related objects or anything that you might want to pass with them. Minimally, a notification will have a name, but more often than not, it will also have sort of a related object that is usually the poster of the message. So whomever is posting this message to the Notification Center, they will set themselves as the object for that message. And it can also have a user info dictionary that can have any number of things in it. That's sort of up to the developer to populate however they see fit. So I guess the easiest way really to see how this works is to go through an example. And we're going to go with something that's near and dear to my heart. We'll go with a personal finance app. So let's say you have a beautiful personal finance app. And on the left side, you have a source list that is a list of accounts. And on the far right side, you have sort of a detail panel. And it'll be an account detail panel in this case. So every time you add an account to your list on the left, you want the detail panel to show that new account. Well, there's a few different ways that you could get this to happen, but you could very well use the NS Notification Center. So each time a new account is created in that source list, we'll call the NS Notification Center and ask it to post a message saying that this new account was created. Now, since it's a singleton, we say NS Notification Center default center. That's how we get access to the singleton instance. And then we'll say post notification name, and we'll give it a name. We'll call it account created in this case. And then we can also pass it an object. So it's post notification name object. Now, I said before that typically we will pass in the sender will be the object will be the object that's associated with the notification. But you don't have to do that. And in this case, we're not going to. We're just going to set the object as the account that was created. Now, over on the other side, we have our account detail view controller, let's say. And we want to know whenever new accounts are created. So we go to the NS Notification Center, and we say we want to add observer, give it a selector, so the method that's going to handle, that's going to be triggered when the observing notification is posted. So add observer, selector, name, object. So in this case, we would say NS Notification Center, default center, add observer, self. So in this case, we want to add ourselves, the account detail view controller, as the observer. The selector, we will just call it handle account creation. And note that this selector needs to have needs to follow a specific pattern. It needs to be a void method, and it has to take as its only argument an NS Notification object. So it's actually receiving the notification object right into that selector. And then the name will be account created, because that's what we're publishing from the source list. And the object in this case is going to be nil. We're going to set nil because if you set nil as the object, any account created message that gets posted, any account created notification that gets posted, we will receive. You can use the object to sort of narrow your selection. So if for some reason we had multiple source lists, multiple account lists for some reason, and we only wanted to receive notifications from one of them, we could specify that specific account list. And then when we post messages, when we post notifications from that source list, then we would set our object as the source list. And the Notification Center would handle doing the filtering for us, so that if the source object that we were posting from did not match the object that we had subscribed to, then we wouldn't get those messages. So you can use that as to sort of filter and narrow. But in this case, since we're posting the account that was created in the notification, we're just going to pass nil. So we're going to get every single account created message that comes down. And then, so each time one is posted, our handle account creation method will get called. We'll get a nice NS notification object passed into that. We can then ask it for its object, which will be the account. And then we can sort of populate the account detail screen with that object. Does that make sense, John?
It makes perfect sense. I use notifications a lot, and I was going to ask you, you know, when you're thinking about designing your application or working on it, you know, when do you use a notification versus using a delegate method?
Yeah, so notifications, that's a really good question, because at first glance, you're like, well, why wouldn't I use delegation? Why wouldn't I use the responder chain? Why wouldn't I use any number of other methods? And really what the notification center gets you is a way to sort of have many subscribers to one message. So you're not, like with a delegation pattern, it's typically one delegate. You add yourself as a delegate, and then that instance gets the delegate messages. Well, with a notification center, you don't have to know anything about the class that's posting these notifications. So you can just, the notification center itself sort of obfuscates out sender and receiver. It acts as an anonymizer, I guess you could say.
A broker, kind of like that.
One might say a broker, yes. So, and it gives you a way to sort of set up multiple notification receivers very easily. You don't have to worry about setting up multiple delegates or anything else like that. It's really when you have an event that occurs within your app that you know you're going to want to have handled or responded to by a number of different instances.
Yeah, I use a lot of notifications in MemoryMiner because, for instance, if a new library is loaded, there are lots of other controllers for displaying people and the contact sheet for displaying photos and one for places. And so, you know, when that happens, there are a lot of things that have to happen. You have to kind of, you know, clear out data that may be displayed in a bunch of table views or a bunch of collection views, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So I kind of think of it like being the person at a party. You know, you see these old-fashioned movies where somebody, you know, blows a whistle and says, "Piping aboard," and here comes so-and-so. It's like, we'll announce something that's going on. Everybody needs to worry about it.
Yep, exactly.
Now, exactly. And I have another question. It's like, okay, well, this is for within your applications. What happens if you wanted to send a notification to another application that's not yours?
Well, I'm going to defer to you, John. I think you just set yourself up a little bit because I have not actually done that with NS Notification Center, and it wasn't until you told me that you could that I knew that even existed. So I'll let you feel this one.
I had this problem where I was trying to basically have two different applications, one of which was downloading some stuff from Flickr to be able to post a notification to another kind of simple slideshow program that I'd written it. So that it could say, hey, there's a new collection of photos that have been downloaded and are available for your displaying pleasure. And you're right, you can't do it with NS Notification Center, but there's such a thing called, drumroll please, NS Distributed Notification Center. And it works pretty much the same way. It's grand and glorious.
Nice. That's very cool. So is that a subclass of NS Notification Center? I mean, is it a... Or is it just similarly named?
I assume that it is, but I actually posted a link to it, and yes, it is a subclass of NS Notification Center.
Oh, nice.
And oddly enough, you can find this in the Cocoa documents. Who would know?
Fantastic. Cool. Well, I wanted to point out a couple of little nuggets with Notification Center. In 10.6 in Snow Leopard, you know, Apple updated a lot of the APIs under the hood, and they added a lot of different, basically enhanced the APIs like crazy. And one of the things they added was blocks. So Notification Center actually got some block lovin' in this case, and you can actually use blocks to process notifications in 10.6. So that's pretty cool. And one of the other things is that notifications are used throughout the Cocoa frameworks. And in fact, in AppKit, many of the classes didn't have formally declared protocols before 10.6. I think 10.6 was really when they started to make a push more towards these formal delegate protocols like you see on the iOS. But before that, it was really just sort of these informal delegates that would be backed by notifications. So when you set yourself as the delegate of NSWindow, NSWindow would then subscribe you to a bunch of notifications through the notification center, sort of under the hood, so that the window will resize method is actually, if you look at it, the method signature is a void window will resize, and it takes a notification. And this is kind of neat because you can take these informally declared protocols and figure out what the notification names are from them. So for the AppKit notifications, you can say window will resize is actually an NS window will resize notification message. So without setting yourself as the delegate of a window, you can set up instead to just receive notifications for window will resize without having to worry about, am I the delegate? Am I not? It's sort of that same thing that we were talking about before, is to where you can just go straight to the notification center and say, I want to know when this window will resize, and it will tell you. So that's kind of a neat little nugget there.
That is a very fine nugget. Now, as a responsible coder, when your object goes away, should you then take care to unsubscribe from the notification center?
You most definitely should, probably. So
definitely, maybe.
Comes with age.
Well, I'm trying to think if John's trying to sucker me into something or not.
I would not dare do that.
Yes, you can absolutely, anytime that you want to unsubscribe yourself from notifications, you can remove observer method on the notification center, and remove observer self for the name, whatever the name was that you'd subscribe to, and the object, whatever the object was, and it will take you out of the notification center, and we will no longer receive notifications.
It's like your way of it's the equivalent of a kid putting fingers in their ears and going la 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 la, I'm not listening to you.
That's exactly correct. Yes. So there's our very short, succinct NS Notification Center topic. It's one that you should know if you're writing Coco, and hopefully now people if go to the docs. Definitely go to the docs. It is a very short topic, but it's one that's worth knowing sort of inside and out.
I don't know if you want to pick up on something that was said in the chat room, which I have totally lost the chat room. Here we are, from Simon, about the fact that NS Workspace has its own notification center.
Really? Now, see, I say that everyone should know this inside and out, and I did not know this. I did not know that NS Workspace had its own notification center.
My guess is I'm wondering if that's not how NS Distributed Notification Center works.
Oh, that's a very good possibility.
It's a good possibility.
See, now you know there's just people listening. They're out walking their dog, or they're driving in their car, and they're screaming at their iPod right now, like, it's because of blah. Like, they know the answer, and it's driving them crazy that we don't.
Well, Danny wants us all to know that you can create notification centers at will if you wish to.
Yeah, but Danny, he's in his 20s. Let's be honest. What is...
Probably just been listening too much of... Now, who is it that says singletons are evil? Isn't it Dave Dribben?
Yeah, I think that's Dave. Yeah.
And I'm trying to understand why. I've never bothered to ask why, because I use them all the time. So I just don't want to know why a singleton is bad.
Workspace has its own... there's not much in the documentation about the notification center in NS Workspace, at least not in the method definition. It just says returns the notification center for workspace notifications.
Not to be off topic, but I wanted to share with you the fact that your colleague Danny says he loves you.
Aww, it's very sweet.
In a very sexual way. But there we are.
Wait, John, that's not true. I just pulled up the chat room and he's using some very foul language on me here. This is
something
not
like fornication under consent of king? I don't know.
Oh my gosh. Ow. Right, we're going to move on. Thank you very much for that, Mr. Fay, and the chat room for joining in, and John for joining in. Yeah, this is why it's good to be live, because we can we can admit that we don't know it all and learn from the chat room as we go along. So thank you, chat room, as well, even Danny, for pointing stuff out. And even though you're responsible for using foul and abusive language in the chat room, but there we are. That was this week's Coco Fusion. Thank you, Michael.
Hey, my pleasure.
This is where we should really have some mix. Oh, yeah, there's a... Woo! Okay, right, let's... before we move on to the main part of the show... Yeah, yeah, that's enough, thank you. before we move on to the big part of the show... now, this isn't new. It's been around for a little while, but there's been a few tweets on it today, so I just thought we'd pick up on it. But obviously, a company called JetBrains, who are well-known for... doing IDEs in the Windows world, in the Java world, and doing refactoring tools and stuff like that, are currently working on an Objective-C IDE for the Mac called CIDR, C-I-D-R. And so I thought it'd just be good just to spend a couple of minutes just having a discussion on, is this a good idea for them? Is it a business idea? I mean, Xcode is free. Is this going to be good for developers in the end based on the fact that if there's a competition, but then again, Apple don't make anything from Xcode and they don't necessarily need to care what anybody else is doing. So what's your general thoughts on the fact that there may now be an alternative IDE in town to do Objective-C?
I definitely have a few thoughts on this, Scotty. I definitely don't begrudge anyone for wanting to build any piece of software. Let's just get that out of the way first. If these guys want to spend their time creating an IDE for writing Objective-C, that's totally fine. Good for them. I probably will not end up using it. And if it were me, I wouldn't go through with it because I don't think it's a very good idea. I feel like, sort of from an end user's point of view, from someone who is using the IDE, that the possibility of now, let's say that Apple releases 10.7, and let's say that these guys have not gotten their IDE working for 10.7. And so now I'm using an IDE that no longer works for the latest operating system. Whereas with Xcode and stuff, that what's out there is going to be kept current with the operating system. And you don't have to worry about an external dependency on something that you're using to get your day-to-day job done. So it's really just not, it's not something I would really have any interest in using. And I can't imagine that there's much of a viable market for it, to be perfectly honest.
And well, if nothing else, they could provide the service that instead of saying, I've been Sherlocked, I've been jet-brained.
I've been jet-brained. That sounds much more painful than being Sherlocked. Now, the other side of the fence is that we don't really know much about this IDE yet, because the website is just like a teaser, and it's 10 facts about JetBrains CIDR. And there's really nothing, there's not a lot of content here, there's no screenshots. It's hard to speculate on exactly what it's going to provide, but...
I'm really myself unsure about this, by the fact that it's... I can't understand why they think there is possibly a market here. In the Windows world, where there is, the IDEs are quite expensive in Visual Studio. That's one thing. In the Rails world, where there isn't really an IDE, there's maybe lots of text editors or something. But when there is a free IDE that's being used almost, by 100% of Mac developers. I'm not sure what they think they can bring to the party, unless, of course, they're going to add a whole bunch of extras Xcode just doesn't support that makes it to the point that actually it's worth taking the risk and changing. Because one thing I do notice is they say it will open and create Xcode projects. So I guess if they were to maintain that Xcode compatibility all the time, the stuff you were saying, Michael, about... taking the risk at not keeping up goes out the window a little bit, because actually you can always go to Xcode if suddenly it doesn't work anymore.
Yeah, that's true. That's definitely true. But I definitely agree with you saying that I'm not sure what the market is here. At the risk of sounding like a person that, I don't see why we ever need anything other than Xcode. I mean, yes, there's definitely gripes with Xcode. These guys could absolutely write something that is far better. We don't know. But at the same time, I don't know. I don't see the appeal from a development point of view, as someone who would develop this. And I don't see it. I don't really see the appeal yet, of course, because we don't really know anything too much about it. I don't see the appeal of using it yet.
Right, welcome back, podcast listeners. You don't even realize we've taken a break, but we've just mighty technical stuff that makes us really clever at fixing this stuff. In other words, we jiggled with things until it worked. We've no idea what we did, but there we are. Okay, so have we finished the whole JetBrains IDE thing? Basically, we're thinking they're not going to get very far. Is that a general conclusion?
I think that who knows? But they haven't said enough for us to be able to make that conclusion. That's what I say.
I think it would be very interesting if point two said that it runs on Linux or Windows, for what it's worth. And I know that's almost an impossibility, but that would be interesting to bring more app developers into the fold. But I think otherwise, I don't see anything there that differentiates it from Xcode.
Yeah, I absolutely agree with that. I think that if there was a big differentiator in there like that, like, oh, hey, you can develop on Linux and Windows, and they did it well, you know, with that caveat, then they would definitely have a selling point, because I, you know, go ahead.
Maybe they're pointing out that it's Mac OS X only on Intel-based computers because everybody will know them for writing their tools in Java, and maybe they're trying to say this is going to be a native client.
Yeah,
it's a good point.
It's very possible.
I'd be surprised if it was a native client, if they're Java for everything else. But there we are. Of course, they might have problems then if they start using a certain future release of a certain operating system, which obviously we can't talk about because we'd have to kill everybody. But there we go.
Redacted.
Yes. Okay. We still have him on the line, and he's now in real time instead of some time zone 1 minute behind everybody else. We're going to go to our software business segment. Brendan Clavin, it's great to have you on the show, and this is the moment that we've all been waiting for. You are the star. You are the main attraction, so you better be darn good.
Great. I'm glad I got out of my time warp and got back into real time. So I think that's what's been wrong with my life so far, these 4 decades. So there you go. You guys fix me. Thank you.
There we are. We fixed you. That's fantastic. That sounds like a Coldplay song. But there we go. Brendan, tell us who you are.
So I'm Brendan Clavin, and I'm the CTO and co-founder of a company called Tetris. I formed this company 1 year ago, and it's designed to bring localization services to the mobile app developer community. That's what we started out doing, mobile apps, and we're pretty focused on that, but we have started to do some Mac OS apps. I've been working a little bit with John on his app, and you know, we've got more interest in the Mac side. So you know, my background is I've worked in internationalization and localization for 20 years, worked for a lot of big name companies. I started out my career at Claris, a subsidiary of Apple. And most recently, before I started this company, I was at Google for 4.5 years, where I managed a lot of infrastructure and tools internally at Google to localize their products at scale. We had 50 or 60 products, and some of them in 100 languages. So there was a huge amount of infrastructure required for that within Google. So I got this idea to start this company because I saw some things happening in the industry that I thought needed to be addressed. First off, I think the profile of the development shops or the app developers started to shrink. It was no longer the Googles or the Adobes or the Microsofts of the world that were producing software. It became guys at home in their bedrooms, guys doing, you know, secondary jobs, and small groups coming together. And in terms of localization and getting their apps out into the international markets, the industry was not there to service what, or is not there to service really, the needs of these small app developers. You know, typical localization companies will tell you, assign a project manager and they will take care of your localization for you. And I'm thinking, well, one guy wearing many hats, that's not going to scale. So really what I wanted to do was automate and streamline the whole localization production workflow process, and try to do that right down into the IDE itself, into Xcode, and empower developers at that level to, you know, internationalize their apps and localize their apps and buy localization services in a very streamlined manner. So that's what we've built. We've built a service in the cloud that allows developers to upload their localizable content, request translations from our network of human translators, and deliver those translations right back into Xcode via zip file, or we have integration with SVN. So if you've got all of your localizable assets and localized assets in the cloud in SVN, we'll talk directly to SVN, pull strings out of there, translate them, and get them back to you.
And so how many languages do you offer at the moment?
We offer every language that is supported on iOS and Mac. So I think it's about 42 languages. And so you basically upload your content and pick a language, you get a price quote, and we will then accept your payment and go ahead and get that translated into the different languages.
Right, okay. So, I mean, you were talking about this need to be streamlined because, you know, it was no longer necessarily multinational companies you're doing this stuff. It was some guy in his bedroom doing stuff. So, I mean, is the service all designed to operate smoothly for that type of operation? And is it priced accordingly for that operation type of operation?
It is. And so, yeah, so let me get into some of the details of that. So I guess I should probably give a little bit of background for the audience on what I like to differentiate between internationalization and localization itself. So internationalization is really an engineering process that should happen at the architectural level in your app. And so, you know, an internationalized app will, for example, accept non-English data as input. So you ask somebody to put in a username and they can type it in any language. An internationalized app will display date and times correctly based on wherever the user is in the world. And an internationalized app will also sort data correctly for non-English languages. And so a lot of that, you know, in the Mac world is provided by the operating system, the date formats and supports and sorting. So all of that's good. But just in general, that's a process that a developer needs to go through before they ever go out to do localization. And then further to that, within Xcode, you know, Xcode allows you to organize your directory structures so that you can do localization quite easily. So the sort of at a very high level, you take each of your localizable files within Xcode, and typically they'll be XIB files for layout, your .strings file when you externalize all your strings out of your code into a file called localizable.strings, and then you might have images that have text on them that need to be translated, or you might have sounds that play in the game, like maybe exclamations when you do something well, like well done, or so on. And so you take all of those assets within Xcode, and you get information on those assets, and you make those files localizable. And what Xcode does is it actually marks them as localizable, moves them into a folder called English.lproj, and then you subsequently go in and you say, right, for these particular files, I want to translate them into French, German, Japanese, Spanish, whatever language it is. And Xcode takes care of organizing all of that content on disk and within the Xcode viewer on a per-language basis. So you end up with all of these different what are called LProj directories. And so when your app is ready for translation, your localizable content will be in an English.lproj directory, and every other language will have its own directory, such as ES for Spanish, ES.lproj, FR.lproj, JA.lproj. Your job then as a developer is to get the contents of your English.lproj into the hands of a translator, translate it, and get it back then, the Spanish version, the French version, build it into your app, test it, and ship it. And so getting back to your original question, what we do is we basically will take English.lproj directory and generate all of the localized content for you and deliver it back into SVN, or you can zip download it and put it into your project and build it from there. One of the things that we've done is for XIB translation and indeed for all the other file types like localizable.strings, we have built a WYSIWYG editor, and we built it on top of Flex, and it's deployed as an Adobe Air application. So when it comes to resizing and repositioning elements in an XIB file, our translators take care of that. And they don't actually have to be running Mac OS to do this. They can run it on Air, so it can be on Linux, Windows, or Mac. And Tetris will return to you properly sized XIB files, dialogues, alerts, and so on, right into your source tree. So very unlike the guidelines from Apple, which says, hey, run IB tool or NIB tool and extract all of your strings from your XIB files or NIB files and send them out for translation of strings, bring them back, and then you're left doing all of the layout and tweaking. We take care of all of that, and we've empowered the translator to take care of that. So price point, generally, you know, localization, there's two ways you can go about doing this today as a developer. You can contact a localization company and ask them for a quote, and they'll typically quote you back. There's project management fees on top of that. There's a human interaction. They accept your files via FTP or via email, and they send them back to you in that manner. That's one way you can go out and do it. The second way is you can go and find translation services online, but you're going to end up with a relationship with each of the translators for each of the languages you want translated. Deliver those files to them via email, get them back, unzip them, build them into your app, tweak them, test them, look at the layouts, and so on. And we've tried to automate and streamline that whole process in terms of files right out from disk, right up into the service, and then properly format and deliver back to you. So on a pricing level, we offer a free account to developers today to come in and, you know, give this a shot. So it's a basic account. They upload their your localizable assets, and we give you quotes for that. Our price point is we charge $39.99 per language to initiate a project, and then we charge a per word rate for all the words to be translated. And for European languages, our rate is 18 cents per word, and that involves a professional translator translating it, and then a professional reviewer reviewing it. So it's two eyes on your project. And so, you know, we've done apps as little as $130, $140 per language to get translated, right up to maybe, you know, $2,000 for a heavy content app that needed specialist translation in the medical field. So we believe we're really priced lower than the traditional model, traditional localization companies. And it's really because we don't have project managers managing your files. We don't have account managers that you've got to deal with, you know, over the phone or in person. And so all of that, all of those layers are taken out of the supply chain. And that's why we believe we're competitive. We're working on tools that you can order this right from within Xcode. We don't have a client today. Everything is done through the browser. But we're working on that. And, you know, in a few months' time, I hope that we're right there integrated into the Xcode environment where you can order these translations. I should add one thing to this whole sort of process, and that is I think the big selling point for us or the appeal to developers is maintenance going forward. So let's say you've done your project today and you've gone through the pain of internationalizing your app, translating it, getting everything done. Then you come along in a month's time and you've added a new feature, you're fixing a bug, or somebody has complained about something. The beauty of our system is that you literally upload your latest English content and you forget about everything else, and we tell you what you've changed since the last time we downloaded your translated files, and we only charge you and only put into production for translation the actual changes that have taken place. So if you've added 50 new strings, you get the 50 new strings translated. We rebuild all your latest localized content based on the original English that you uploaded. Plus, we leverage all of the layout information, font information, size information that we provided originally with the original translation. So you're not having to manage the diffs across 10 languages. You really just keep uploading your latest English and we tell you what's changed and you pay accordingly.
And that, to me, is probably the coolest thing. So let me ask you this, Mr. Rooney. Muddywell is localized in a couple different languages, isn't it? Oh my gosh, have we lost Michael? Okay, well, he's not here.
I'm sorry, John. Sorry, I had muted Skype and then couldn't find the window to unmute it again. I believe we're localized. I'm gonna have to check. I don't remember. Oh, terrible employee! Everyone, buy Muddywell. There, I made up for it by plugging.
We're out to change those attitudes among the developer community. It's not all about, I'm just kidding, Michael. It's not all about English. And that is part of it too, right? Is the opportunity out there for people.
Right. Well,
but sorry, I just had to get that
one. No, absolutely. Well, let me share my story because I don't think it's all that uncommon. I mean, it's like you release an application and if it's at all popular, you end up getting these emails from people saying, hi, you know, I'm a student, you know, in France and I'd like to localize, you know, your app for you. Or, you know, and in the more obscure languages, there tend to be kind of a small number of people who are known among indie developers as people that are capable of localizing it. And these, you know, they're great and glorious people. And with them, you're able to localize your applications in a couple different languages. And so I was very, very proud of the fact that Memory Miner, you know, was localized in like Danish, Japanese, Chinese, Portuguese, and Brazilian and continental, you know, French, German, and Italian. And, I did it all manually, right? And, you know, and it was a fairly manageable process, at least for me, because I'd actually started my career working in a translation and language services company, so I was kind of attuned to this stuff. But you know, it was a fairly manageable process. But I'm just ashamed to say that 1 year after release, Memory Miner 2X has not been localized in any languages. And the huge reason is because managing there were so many changes across so many NIB files, I just found it impossible to take the work that had already been done and bring it forward. And so that was kind of my first question when I came across Tetris at Macworld, whatever, a month or so ago, and kind of like, you know, hoodwinked Brendan into coming onto the show, because, you know, that's the real thing, is that basically you're going to make an investment. You're already making an investment in time to make your app localizable. But if you've done even one language, then the difference between, you know, your 1X and your 2X is a relatively small number of translatable terms. You're a fool not to carry it forward. And I just know for a fact I'm losing sales in different markets because I don't have it localized. The thing I was also going to point out is that their online applications is pretty clever in that it, one of the first things that it does is that you can do a translation into what they call pseudo-German. And that is known as being a language that causes things to have very long string lengths. So something that might be 6 characters in English is no fewer than 273 once you translate it into German. And so that, of course, changes the sizing of your buttons, for instance, or the alignment of your text labels or whatever. And they've done something rather clever in that their web app actually simulates what you're seeing. So you can get an idea of what changes you might have to make your layouts a little bit more easily, you know, localizable. And as Brendan had pointed out, you know, the App Store for iOS has been available in many languages, many countries for a long time, and now, of course, we have the Mac App Store. And I would say that given the pricing that you have available for this, and the depth and breadth of the international markets, you're absolutely leaving money on the table if you don't localize your app. And this is the first service, the first, you know, mechanism I can see to be able to do it professionally at a price where you can get a return on investment.
Yeah, John, you know, thanks for bringing up the pseudo translation thing. And I think you've explained it very well. That is part of our service. I did want to add one thing for the listeners, and that is what you did. We've built what you did in terms of somebody contacted you and said, can I do this for you? And you worked with them and you got them to volunteer, and that was great. We have built that in from day one into our service. So you, as a customer of Tetris, sign up and you can buy from us, you know, X number of languages. Or you can tell us that you have your own favorite student who works for free, or your cousin in Germany, or your aunt in China, who has done your translation for you. And we allow them to come into our system and use our tools to translate your content. And we don't have a business transaction between you and, we don't have a business transaction between that translator and us. They just get to use our tools. Now, we do charge a per word fee for that facility. And I think it's 3 cents per word for every word that you put through with your own private translator. And so we recognize that people have relationships. We recognize that people have cousins or whatever that they want to maintain. And so, you know, we believe that the the, you know, you upload once and you order languages, and whether it's from your cousin or from it's from Tetris and our professional network of translators, it's the same experience for you as the developer. And really what we've tried to do is build a service that is worth your time, right, and effort to pay us to source these translators with our cloud-based service. You can spend 6 hours unzipping emails from people around the world, but you might want to be out building new features or new apps. And I think this is very true in the iOS world. And I think it's true in the Mac world too, but maybe more on the iOS side. It's all about getting out apps out there. It's the number of apps you have and keeping it updated and so on.
Okay, Brendan, based on the fact that I know everything's very app specific and some cultures need certain apps and some don't, but just as a general principle, on the basis that these services are available, they sound very affordable, even to the smallest app developers, what languages, at least as a minimum, do you think people should be putting their applications into?
Yeah, so, our standard list of languages that we tell people is French, German, Spanish, Japanese, Korean, and Chinese. These are the ones that our current customers are going into. Some of them have requests for Swedish outliers. But the languages I just mentioned are the core languages. France is a big market, Germany is a big market. They speak English over there, but it is probably where the most localized apps are sold. And France and Germany have typically been, powerhouses, if you like, or strong markets for Apple for years. And so going to the Asian languages then, Korea is a sort of a walled garden in terms of language. They do speak English over there, but they like to have their own or appear to be their own apps. And Japan is kind of the same. I think things are changing too, and I think we're going to see more demand for languages outside the ones I've just mentioned. And here's my view on this, having been working on this for the past year. I think up until very recently, the iPhone was an expensive device, right? And the people that bought it from a socioeconomic background tended to have more disposable income, and so they tended to be better educated, so they tend to speak English. So they got away with buying English apps. And I think that's where, a lot of developers have been successful, just publishing their apps worldwide in English. But I think that's changing. When the iPhone is now available for $49 at AT&T, it'll soon be available, for 20 euros on, basic plans in Europe. The iPad changes the game a little bit here as well, in that people are buying iPads and they're handing them to their kids that haven't had a third level education, that haven't studied English, they're not at that age yet, and they're handing it to parents and grandparents who in some of these countries don't speak English at all. And for them to be able to use the device and use the apps in it, it's going to need to be localized. So, I'll go back to what I said originally, they're the languages I would recommend right now. And China, I'll throw in a comment about China. China is the fastest growing market right now for Apple. Q4 sales for Apple 2010, 12% of their revenue came from Greater China, which is Hong Kong, China, and Taiwan. Now, obviously, that's hardware sales and Mac sales and, apps and so on. But it's just indicative of Apple as a mature technology company and where their growth is. And it is overseas. It is in the non-English speaking markets.
I can't agree any more. Here's something else that kind of occurred to me is that, a lot of indies who have had their apps localized, they tend to just do the localizable strings file and the nib files. They kind of punt on the help. At least that was my case. I have Japanese translations and Danish translation, but the other ones I didn't feel right, kind of asking somebody who had volunteered or whatnot to be able to take on doing the help manual. But Brendan, do you also have done some translation of like HTML help files that are used for like Apple help?
Yes, we have. We've done that for a couple of customers. We haven't had on the iOS apps, you don't tend to have huge help stacks. So people aren't coming to us with that. There's only so much content they build into the app. And some people have asked us about their websites, and we haven't gone there, although we can translate HTML.
All right. Well, I'm glad that we got this on there. Scotty's starting to pull the hook on us, though.
I see that he's tapping nervously.
No. It's just, you know, I think, you know, let's leave him wanting more is always a good way, because, you know, it's, I mean, I just want to thank you for coming on, Brendan. And, okay, some people may say, well, that was a bit of an ad, but, you know, I think, you know, you're providing a service which is going to allow people to do things that really a lot of smaller developers wouldn't have been able to do before. And I think, you know, the reality is that, you know, if someone's got a choice, between your app in English or someone else's app in their own native language, the other guy's at a big advantage. So if it's possibly within affordability, and not just affordability, but, you know, the process works for people and in time scales that work, you know, then I'm going to suggest that everyone out there, if you've got an app and it's not internationalized and localized yet, you need to go take a look, because, you know, I think, there's lots out there that can be done, and it's all coming within your reach now.
Yeah, and Scotty, thanks for having me on, and I'll just make a comment there. Yeah, you're right about the sales pitchy, but I'll be quite happy to come back at another time and just go pure technical. What goes on in Xcode? What are the calls? What are the, you know, NS localized string? How to do sounds? So if you wanted to do it at a very technical level where there's no pitch, I'd be happy to come back and talk through that at some stage.
No. Yeah, well, I mean, you're welcome to come back and talk about that. That might be great, but please don't take that as a comment about the sales pitch.
Oh, sure.
Was bad. It was good. People needed to hear that, I think. Well, I needed to hear that. That was great. So, and it's my show, so I don't care about anybody else.
Great.
So there we are.
We look forward to you signing just up for an account tomorrow.
Yeah, I will be signing up. That would mean my app might be ready to release tomorrow, but yeah, I'm struggling to get out in one language at the moment. There we are.
There you go.
So just remind people where they can go to find information.
Yeah, so www.tetras.com, TETHRAS.com. We have information about our service, and if you log on and open up a free account, and you do that within the next couple of weeks, we'll do French free translation for you. But also when you log on as a developer, we have a whole guide to internationalizing your app. Nothing different than Apple provides, but it is more geared towards getting your app ready for translation. You can follow us on Twitter at Tetras, TETHRAS. And my email address, if anyone wants to contact me and get more information, is bclavin, BCLAVIN, at tetras.com, TETHRAS.com.
That's fantastic. Thank you very much. So go sign up, get that free French translation. Love some feedback from some of the listeners as well to how you felt the service went. I think that's always useful for other listeners as well. And, you know, what you'd wished you'd done and not done before going for it. And that'd be great. So thank you very much, Brendan. That's been fantastic. Mr. Fay, remind us who you are and where people can find out about you.
That damn mute button keeps hiding on me. Anyway, I am Michael Fay. You can follow me on Twitter at Mr. Rooney, MRROONI. And I work for No Thirst, and you should go buy all of our stuff. Moneywell for Mac and Moneywell for iPhone, available on the Mac and iOS app stores. So, yeah, that's me.
Yeah, you're not allowed to do sales pitches. No, you are. It's okay. But it's too late. You did anyway. John, you've been the perfect co-host as ever. In fact, you've taken over the show because I was busy trying to find chat rooms and everything. So thank you very much. Remind people where your expertly crafted software and musings may be found.
So you can find out all about my product Memory Miner at memoryminer.com. I blog about the development of it at memoryminer.com/blog. And on Twitter, you can follow me as Djembe, G-J-E-M-B-E, like the West African drum.
Okay, and I'm Scotty from MyDeveloper TV. You can follow me on Twitter at MacDevNet. But I want you to go and check out developersagainstpoverty.org. We reached our $50,000 target, I think actually just before last week's show, wasn't it? So we've upped the target to $75,000. That's to bring 3,750 people clean water for the next 20 years around the world. It's been a slow week. We passed our target, we're stomping through, and now we've raised about $400 or $500 this week. There's still 1 month to go. I know there's loads of people out there planning days. We had a Developers Against Poverty Day at iDeveloper TV last week, and all the proceeds from that, they haven't gone in the pot yet, we're about to. So, you know, that 50,000 has been raised by just 91 people so far. There are thousands of you out there listening. It doesn't matter if it's only a dollar, it's all you can afford. Go to developersagainstpoverty.org. donate some money. $20 will give a person clean water for 20 years in a sustainable way, putting a well in a place, not just putting a well, but putting all the training in place, putting the resources there to keep that well running for 20 years. It's a great project. We're working with Charity Water. They're the ones who collect the money. You're not giving any money to me directly. There's no trust issue with that. They're just getting the money. They're a registered charity. You can do all your tax claims. But yeah, regardless of all that, yeah, developersagainstpoverty.org, go do the right thing, give some cash. The money has to be given by the 31st of March because that's when the campaign closes, because that's when the Charity Water is going to draw the money down and get it straight out to the field as fast as possible. So please. Yeah, I know I sound like I'm begging, but this is important. This is really important to me anyway. Developersagainstpoverty.org, come and give us your money. Michael, Brendan, John, thank you very, very much. It's been a real pleasure. We've had technical problems, but I think the content has been worth all the issues we've had. And to all you guys out there in the chat room, thank you for all the extra information you've given, and thank you for all your comments. And until all of you, until next time, you take care.